Hey, it's John Lee Dumas of EO Fire, and it's The Entrepreneurial You, the show for dedicated and passionate Caribbean entrepreneurs seeking daily inspiration, brought to you by author, speaker, and award-winning entrepreneur, Henneka Watkus Porter. You must be prepared to ignite.
Hi, this is Henneka. I'm so glad you took the time to stop by today. In Jamaican parlance, Wagwan. Me glad to say a dial. This episode is sponsored by HennekaWatkusPorter.com as well as the Jamaica Stock Exchange. Now, on HennekaWatkusPorter.com, you can visit us for blogs, resources, books, online podcast courses, podcasts, and more. If you are new to the Entrepreneurial You podcast, be sure to check out past episodes with guests such as John Lee Dumas, Patrice Washington, Seth Godin, Richard Branson, Amy Porterfield, and a host of other game changers.
We needed to raise capital, but our experience with local financial institutions was that they were cautious and slow to act, and interest rates were far too high. We had real concerns about financing our business through outside equity investors and the possibility of interference. Could we get a fair valuation for our business? We had our own ideas about the business and its value. Should I go the traditional route of bank financing, or should I try the Jamaica Stock Exchange? So we made a call and experienced transformation of our business through conversations. I'm John Mahfood, CEO of Jamaican Teas, and we're listed on the Jamaica Stock Exchange.
Give us a call today at 876-967-3271 to begin your transformation through conversation. We want to see your company listed on the Jamaica Stock Exchange.
And now, here's today's episode. Coming up on this episode of The Entrepreneurial You.
Throughout that entire time, I was either sitting in cafes or in Airbnbs, obviously with my laptop, and I would coordinate either launch campaigns or just write a blog post or a newsletter, and the business would kind of run behind me. And that was the deliberate choice to build that kind of business, to go after that business model. And it was a goal almost from like that 18-year-old, really wanted to create something like that. So it took me 10 years. Like, I was 28 when I did that round the world trip to finally kind of realize the goal. But that was definitely the culmination, I guess, of the ultimate freedom, travel, digital nomad lifestyle that I was going for.
If you think adventure is dangerous, try routine. It's lethal. Paulo Coelho. I don't even know, my friends, if I'm pronouncing that right, but I like it. So it's Coelho is the surname. Paulo Coelho, I say. Greetings, my peak performer. I trust that you're doing great. It is episode 248 of the Entrepreneurial You podcast. And you know by now that I am your host, Henneka Watkus Porter. Or if you're just joining for the first time, well, I'm your host, Henneka Watkus Porter. Today's episode is with Yaro Starock, and Yaro is the co-founder of InboxDone.com, an email management company with a team of 25 plus serving clients, including restaurant owners, venture capitalists, accountants, doctors, lawyers, etc. So much more. Yaro has made 30 plus angel investments in tech startups, including Steezy, Lead IQ, Fluent Forever, Fitbod, and NutriSense, his company has provided investments in Canada and Ukraine. In partnership, built a 3.6 MW solar farm. Wow. During the mid-2000s, Yaro sold his first company, BetterEdit.com, then built an online education business, Blog Mastermind, selling over 2 million of his books and online courses as he traveled the world, living in 26 different cities. And I can't wait to talk with him. Has been featured in Sky News, Forbes, Entrepreneur Magazine, Huffington Post, Business Insider, Founder, and hundreds of media outlets and events. Now, today, we are going to be looking at business and travel, Airbnb style. Welcome, Yaro.
Thank you. God, you read my entire intro. I appreciate that. It's too long now. I think I got to shorten it.
It's okay. I like it because, I mean, I usually cut it down and then look at this, let's do all of this. So with all the traveling that you've done, Yaro, have you ever been to Jamaica? And please say yes, or is this conversation is over?
No, I haven't. I feel terrible too, because it's one of my favorite accents. I always wanted to go. I've been close. I've been in Florida, but I've never been to anywhere in the Caribbean. So that's even worse.
Oh my God. I thought you were going to redeem yourself to say, I've been to Antigua. So perhaps we can say, it's kind of close. It's okay. But it's all right.
I have an excuse though, just to clarify. I spent a lot of my life in Australia. And it's already warm and beachy. So it's very rare, I think, for Australians to want to go to the Caribbean too, because it's all the way across the other side of the planet. Now I live in Canada, and of course, it's way more on my radar. So I think it'll happen very soon.
Okay, yes. And cold Canada, you know where you are right now, Montreal, right?
So yes.
Yeah. Please do get yourself redeemed and visit Jamaica.
I will. I definitely will.
All right. We're not going to hold that against you. We're going to have a great conversation. So before we go any further, as they like to say, who is Yaro?
Well, you already gave my intro. So that's my life story. I think.
Let me preface it. Outside of what I just said. So in a nutshell, kind of share with us, who this personality is that has accomplished all of these things. Maybe a little bit about you when you were growing up.
Sure. Yes. As I said earlier, Australian, born and raised to immigrant parents. They were first immigrants to Canada, but actually before that, Eastern European. And my dad spent a bit of time growing up in Venezuela. But I was born in Australia and I have this Canadian accent. So I've always felt part Canadian, part Australian, and not really fit into either one 100%. Definitely an introvert. So online business appealed to me big time because you can sit in front of your computer and you don't have to be like a super talkative, talking to everyone and trying to always sell something with your voice. Even though I do that a lot with podcasts now and create content as well, but something different about doing it online. I don't know why. And for me, I had very simple goals. I didn't like studying at university or in high school at all. I did it because everyone else did it and you kind of had to. I was just always kind of looking for the alternative path. So that's why when the internet came along, I was just 18 and it was great timing. And that led to creating a website. It wasn't technically a business, but I basically built this card game business. It was Magic the Gathering. I don't know how big Magic the Gathering is in Jamaica. I'm not sure if it.
Never heard of it.
Okay. It's like poker with dragons and elves. So it's kind of geeky. It's actually really huge now. It's become an online game as well. But I'm sure there's a base somewhere in Kingston where people get the magic cards out and play. That was my first website. And it was my hobby while I was in high school as well. So it was an obvious kind of connection. I was a bit nerdy. And then that led to an entire career online, which I'll be honest, I didn't expect those things to happen in that order. My goal was simply not get a job, not have a boss, not have an alarm clock. That was the worst. And not have a cap on my potential to make money. But like all entrepreneurs, step one was to make enough money to survive. So that's actually what my brain was focused on almost, I think, from 16 years old to about 25 years old. Must survive with my own source of income and not someone else's. And to be honest, that was a bit different, especially doing it online back then. I was, I guess, a misfit in some ways. Everyone had a job that I knew. Everyone was starting careers after university. So I certainly felt a little bit like an outcast, especially in a place like Brisbane where I grew up. It wasn't a hotbed for entrepreneurship or technology. You might have heard more in Sydney, but really all of it was going on in the States as far as I was concerned. So it certainly felt a little isolated and that made it difficult. But as you read my bio out, things sort of came together eventually. And I've certainly gone through a whole bunch of different things since then.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you said a whole lot that I could chew on and everything, but here's what I'm going to pick, believe it or not. So okay. We've been talking about accents, right? Ever since you got on here.
Yes.
And I can tell you that Canadian accents for me are the most, it's the most difficult to spot, like one of the most difficult to identify. I still can't like listen to someone and say, hey, he's Canadian. So I got to tell you that your accent comes across more Australian to me than it does Canadian. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's what I'm hearing, more Australian than I'm hearing Canadian. So, All right, but interesting.
You're probably the first person who's ever told me that. Like I get Irish, I get obviously American, as many Canadians mm-hmm. do. I've been told bits of Australian, but never 100%. That's the first thing you chose. So I finally feel Australian. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, anytime, right? Well, I mean, the fact is I already have a difficulty identifying Canadian accents anyway, so that could be it. But for me, it's more, like I said, more Australian. So good. Thanks for sharing that, Yarrow. So you've traveled the world, right? You've visited many, many cities. As I mentioned, you've lived in Airbnbs for 12 months and you've been growing your business and got to the point where you only work 2 hours per day. How did you do that?
Well, no short answer to that question. So the first thing was I had to build a business that was very leveraged, very systematized, and I had help. Obviously, I delegated to assistants and specialists for certain things. When I talk about 2 hours a day of work, when I started writing about that and sort of putting that statement out there, I was referring to the fact that I had a blog and I had an email newsletter and I sold information products. So this is back when I was running that coaching business as my main business. And my job was simply to write and create content, whether it was creating a course or writing a blog post or writing an email newsletter. And I could do that for 2 hours a day and call that a good day if I created like one solid piece of content. But the only reason that worked to make money was there was an established audience. I'd already been blogging for a while to grow an email newsletter and reach people. I already created products that would sell on autopilot because I had email funnels, as people might know, email autoresponders that automatically send emails. That I'd set those up so my products would sell without me. So the first time I ever did a round the world trip was 2008. And that's when I left Australia for an unknown amount of time. I wasn't sure how long I'd go for. And my goal was to see a lot of the world. So I did a complete circle. I went through Fiji, Hawaii, then Canada, then the US, then over to Europe, and then through the Middle East and Asia and back home over 12 months. And throughout that entire time, I was either sitting in cafes or in Airbnbs, obviously with my laptop, and I would coordinate either launch campaigns or just write a blog post or a newsletter, and the business would kind of run behind me. And that was the deliberate choice to build that kind of business, to go after that business model. And it was a goal almost from like that 18-year-old really wanted to create something like that. So it took me 10 years. Like I was 28 when I did that round the world trip to finally kind of realize the goal. But that was definitely the culmination, I guess, of the ultimate freedom, travel, digital nomad lifestyle that I was going for.
So, I mean, with what's happening in the world now, what I'm about to say is changing a bit, but generally, prior to the pandemic, many people thought they have to be married to their location, you know? They're in a particular location and that's where their job is, that's where their business is, and they can't move, they can't do anything somewhere else and so on. How did you get inspired? What inspired you, Yarrow, to know that you can travel the world, the internet is your best friend, and get mm-hmm. things done, work 2 hours per day in some instances, and you're making money? What inspired you to do that?
Well, honestly, the initial inspiration had nothing to do with the internet, because I was initially just learning about entrepreneurship in general. So mm-hmm. I know, for example, the book, The E-Myth, by Michael Gerber, it's a fairly mm-hmm. well-known book, that mm-hmm. was instrumental to teach me, or at least validate the idea that you could build a business that you're not the main operator, in the sense that you have to create the service or you have to create the product and you have to wear all the hats and do everything. You should build a system of people and technology that you run on top of as the owner, the founder. So that was my goal. I wasn't like looking to do a startup and get venture funding and have a big exit. It was simply build a machine that was as close to passive income as possible, and ideally have something I wanted to do within that business. Now, fast forward, of course, the internet came along and it's like, oh, wow, this is obviously an amazing platform for a person like me, especially, an introvert. I didn't want to, for example, get a restaurant or some kind of physical business where I'd have to be in that place to run the business, especially being the operator of it. And even some, you know, other types of businesses where you think you are creating freedom, but you always are being called upon to do something, to be somewhere, to meet a client in person, all those kinds of things. So I didn't want any of that either. So like I said, with my teaching business and even today with Inbox Sun, my current business, they're deliberately remote for our team, deliberately distributed, deliberately digital first, and me doing one core thing that I can do anywhere in the world. Now, why did I want to go around the world? That's simple, the answer. There's a lot to see and do, especially when you're in Australia. Everything is far away. And this is ironic, but I hated being on airplanes, especially for long flights. I hated turbulence. I had a lot of anxiety around that. So any time to leave Australia, I had to burst through that fear bubble of a minimum a 9-hour flight, unless I go to New Zealand, which is across, you know, even that's 3.5 hours away. So that's why when I did that 2008 trip, I was like, I'm making use of this. I'm not going back to Australia yet. I'm going to do a lot of little flights. I'm going to do trains in Europe. Oh my gosh, that was nice. And then more recently, now that
the underwater thing in France, from between France and England?
The channel. Yeah, I've done that, I don't know, 3 or 4 times, I think.
Lovely.
I love that.
Okay. Keep going.
I would prefer train travel over flight any day. I mean, I think it's amazing we can get on planes and be anywhere. I mean, I could see you in about 4 hours, I would be in your country from where I am now. That's pretty crazy. But, you know, Europe with train travel, amazing. I did this trip, not that one, but more recently in the last 3 or 4 years, I was in Ukraine for that solar plant we talked about in my intro. And I wanted to go see a bit more of Europe. I also was writing a book and I was like, this is like, I want to do that romantic thing where you travel over Europe and you sit in cafes and you write your book. But I did it myself. I just booked some train tickets and I went from Ukraine through different cities in Germany, through to Amsterdam, then through to Belgium underneath the channel over to the UK. And I was going to a conference in London. And I spent about 3 weeks completely solo writing my book in like places I'd never been to, like Hamburg and Brussels and, you know, Amsterdam. And it was just like a little like lonely, I guess, too, because I was 100% solo and I was sitting in cafes and writing. But at the same time, wonderful just to see so many different things and try different foods and knowing that I'm just writing and that's my only job at that time. So that was amazing.
All right. So a recurring theme that has been coming up in what you've been talking about, Yaro, is that of systems and delegation. And I know that, you know, maybe just a horse that I've flogged many times here on this podcast, but it's still worth, you know, us getting into a bit, because one of the challenges I see a lot of entrepreneurs have, or prospective entrepreneurs, is just that letting go of, you know, their baby. Nobody else, they say, can handle their baby the way they can, will take care of their baby the way they are taking care of their baby. So for you, how have you been able to get to that point of delegating and creating systems, putting systems in place so that you can live the life that you've been living? And it sounds so romantic and it sounds so amazing. And I get it, because I'll live that life any day, you know, like kindred spirit. I'll do that any day. So yeah, how have you had to navigate that?
Yeah, letting go of the baby. There's two sides to this. I went through the initial period of really wanting to build a team, feeling like I need someone to do my technical things, you know, build my websites and land pages and set technology up, and then also a copywriter, because like I need someone to write the sales pages and things, and then there'd be other things like a social media manager and an ad buyer. But I didn't have the cash. It was a simple source issue, not enough money. My business is not spitting up enough revenue. I obviously want to take some for myself and in profit that I can just suddenly build a massive team. However, I did slowly, and when I say slowly, it was like my first business, I really did all myself. My second business was an essay editing company. That one, I hired a website designer and then a copywriter for a one-time job. And then I hired an email assistant. Now, this is interesting because those other jobs, I was totally happy to hand over tech and copywriting. I felt like, yeah, I should be bringing on experts for these roles. Email was when I really faced that resistance, like you said before. Can someone else do this as well as I can do it? I don't trust anyone, especially because I thought all my money comes from these conversations I have in email. Not all of it, but some of it would come from that.
Yeah, right.
So I went through a very protracted experience of delegating email to my first ever email assistant over about a month or two, just to feel my way through that, see them write the emails, replying to my messages, see them make a sale, like to actually, you know, talk to a potential customer, give them some advice, some answers to their questions. And then that person bought my service back then. Once that happened and I actually saw money come in that I wasn't involved with, then I was like, hallelujah, this is, wow.
It can work.
Yeah, it can work. And then I would wake up on a Monday with no emails in my inbox, website changes done by someone else, all the customer service done by my email assistant. So everything was done for me. And I'm like, okay, this is freedom. That's actually what led to starting a blog and the ability to travel and so many things. So the strange thing is now you fast forward, I still feel the constant desire to hire more people and always being somewhat restricted with cash. But I never feel that sense of it's wrong to outsource. There's always people better. So I had three people doing email on my coaching business. Obviously, my current company, Inbox Done, is what we do. We assign assistants to other owners of businesses and founders and managers. So I'm a proponent of it. I think you should hand over almost anything you can. Maybe find that one thing you do that's your zone of genius, and it's different in each business. Like right now, I'm marketing. My blogging business, I was more pure writer. You know, it changes, but there should really only be one thing, and everything else should be done either by technology or by people. But it has taken a while to build the trust and build the cash flow to get to that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that trust factor. Delve a little deeper into the trust factor and you know, why is there such a reticence at the beginning and how much trust plays a role in letting go?
It's huge, not just trust, but also just skill level, you know, competence. Like, do you believe that person can do whatever it is you're handing over to them as well as you, especially if you're like a solo entrepreneur and you're going through this process for the first time of delegating? It is something you have to do carefully. You have to hand over what you're comfortable with and then maybe hand over more. Like, for example, I now have an assistant who does refunds and upgrades and actually handles my PayPal account and my Stripe account. I would have not given them access to that from day one. You know, it's about finding the right person and building that trust. Also depends on your hiring process. This is something I've really dived into in the last 5 years, not specifically me personally. This was me failing at something. I was a terrible recruiter. I was not good at finding good people. And if you don't have good people, then you can't delegate. So I went through 12 contractors once, 12 assistants, and they all were bad for different reasons, either leaving or not showing up on time or just not good at the work. That's when I realized I have to hand over, I have to delegate hiring to then delegate everything else. So I ended up bringing on a friend of mine named Laura. Well, now she's a friend. She built a hiring system that I helped design with her, but she implemented it. And then we took it into my current company, Inbox Done. So all the hiring we do there is built on this system. And it's very comprehensive. You know, it's about finding the right person, vetting, testing, training, taking through an internal course, nurturing, providing feedback, making sure they know where they're going. So a lot of that obviously all happens now without me. But back when I was sort of doing that, that was the hard part. So once it was up and running and you know you've got a good person, once you find that A player and you put them into that role, it's amazing because they do it better than you can do it. They start seeing things that you didn't see to improve systems and, you know, build documentation, take over more things from you. So when you get the right person in the right role, then it's amazing. But you do have to either get good at hiring and vetting and testing, or find a good source like an agency or hire your own recruiter that will do that hiring and vetting and training part for you. And that's been super important for me because, I sucked at doing recruitment.
Like many of us, right? All right. So Inbox Done, I mean, it kind of, just the name alone kind of alludes to what it is. But just spend a little moment here, Yaro, and just talk about that company, how we can help some entrepreneurs that are listening know what is it that you do.
Well, I kind of already explained the origin story, so you understand why I outsourced my email. And today, the company does exactly that for other people. So my co-founder, Claire, she was one of my email assistants, and she just was really good at what she did. And I said, we should join forces and see if as a company we can help other people. So we did that. And today, it's a very straightforward idea. So if you came to us, Hinnika, with too much email and also too many other things, spending a lot of time with your calendar, as you probably are as a podcast host, you got to constantly coordinate timing and find the right information. Mm-hmm. Some of that you can do with technology. Yeah, you can use a calendar software and follow up emails, but sometimes you just need, you know, the human touch. And certainly with email, you need a human touch more often than not. So what we do is we would assign you two assistants that are selected from our team to match you. And that's matching your personality style, your communication style, your business. And then you meet them and work with them directly. The first thing they do, though, is study you and attempt to clone you, basically become you. So learn everything that you do, discover how you write your emails by going into your email and seeing what you reply to, how you reply, you know, build a knowledge base of templates they can use to speed up things, create folders and filters and reminders. This really systematize that whole function of your inbox and take it off your plate. And then more often than not, they'll take that over, take over as well your calendar, your social media inboxes. So if you're getting a lot of Twitter or LinkedIn or Instagram or Facebook messages, they step in and systematize and reply for you there. And then all the things that an executive assistant can do. So data entry, invoicing, booking travel, research, basically anything that's an admin related task, you can hand over to an inbox done assistant. But we will always start by managing your email and cloning as much as of you as we can. And then hopefully you'll start to get natural at this idea of delegating, and you'll wake up and look at your task list and go, do I need to be the one to do everything on this list? Or can I actually hand this over, you know, to one of my assistants to do for me? So that's basically what it does. And it's inboxdone.com.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like it's a perfect solution to those listening in right now to say, you know, I want to do a lot more traveling. I want to go see the world, but I can't because I have my inbox to take care of. You know, I can't disconnect, stuff like that. So perfect solution, I'm sure, for those of you in that situation. Yaro, it has been such a pleasure talking with you, and I'm inspired. I mean, I thought about, as you were talking about you going and traveling and writing as you're doing that. I mean, the idea for me, it just hit home so much because it's something that I'd really love to do. I love traveling a lot. And particularly, I think when this world, is back to any semblance of normalcy, then I'll be hitting the road traveling again because I really love that. And I have a book to write and, I just can't seem to get in the headspace to do it. So maybe that could be the answer, you know?
Yeah, there's something special about saying you're traveling, but you're traveling also because you're writing your book. It's like that one job you have to do each day.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So based on what we've been talking about business and travel Airbnb style, you know, with you living here, there and everywhere, not necessarily having a permanent address while you travel. What can you share with us as your final thoughts as takeaways for our listeners?
Well, I would suggest if travel is something you want to do, don't let a lack of money stop you, and certainly don't let a fear of the unknown stop you. And those are the two things that kept me in Australia for a lot longer. I should have traveled much earlier and to more places, and just felt like I could. And I really didn't feel like I could because I thought I had to, you know, have $100,000 in the bank so I could stay in hotels. And part of that was because I didn't want to necessarily, you know, rough it. I wasn't looking to camp or stay in 12-person accommodation in a hostel or something like that.
But yeah, hostel life is nice. Can I tell you, let me just interject right there. I stayed in a hostel for the first time in, last year early before the pandemic came with its onslaught, in that way. And it was in Los Angeles, downtown Los Angeles. The hostel was so beautiful. Freehand, I think it's called. I mean, I was amazed that I was in a room with so many different people, nationalities, and the environment was clean and just everything was great. I'm thinking, wow, this is a way to really travel the world and, you know, experience the world. So it was a great experience. I mean, I knew it would. I was just looking for somewhere that was cheap. And then with the cheap came all of this other. And like, wow, I never expected all of this, to be honest with you.
And that's such a good way to travel if, you know, budget is a problem and you like socializing and really mingling with people. I've had some bad experience in his hostels. I was one in Tasmania where there was a scorpion in the shower. Oh. So that was a bit of a shock, and not very clean. And, you know, a lot of drunk people. And the flip side, when you find a modern one often in a big city, because I was in a country town for that hostel. So fair enough. A little bit more rough. Mm-hmm. But, you know, even whatever it is, you find a way, whether it's, you know, couch surfing at the very beginning, to hostels, to then you can get an Airbnb room, to renting the entire Airbnb yourself, which is what I did for a lot of my stays. Mm-hmm.
Or there is something I discovered, and I actually brought somebody in on the program. I discovered HomeAway.org, I think it's called. HomeAway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, HomeAway. It's not a home swap, really. What they do is, I was watching a TV show about home swap. I think it was on Netflix, which is pretty great. But it was, it's a situation where you can actually host person. So let's say you have your company and you're looking for somebody who wants to, who you want to come in and do some work for you, but, and they want to come to Canada or they want to come to Australia, wherever you are. And they come, you feed them, you put them up and they do the work for free, right? It's like that. Or if you are traveling and you want to do the same thing, so you can go do some work for some persons and, you know, work maybe 4 hours per day or something, and they feed you and they put you up. So there are many ways that if you want to travel the world, I mean, I know these things because I, you know, obviously I'm very interested in traveling the world. So So there are many ways that we can do it for cheap, you know, really inexpensive ways, budget friendly ways.
Well, since we're dropping travel hacks, I've got another one. I recently stumbled across through my angel investing, which surprised me. So I invested in a company called Meowtel. It's like cat meow. So M-E-O-W-T-E-L. It's basically cat sitting. So if you're going away, someone comes to your house and looks after your cat. But, and I interviewed the founder, she said, this is actually not necessarily what we're advertising it as, but if you, for example, wanted to visit a new city, we have people who actually stay. Like the idea is the visitor comes to the cat's house and lives with the cat in the house while the owners are away. So you get free accommodation and you get paid because you're there to look after the kitties. So it's not like perfect because you can't necessarily plan your trip around sit will be. But if you're in the States right now and you wanted to maybe visit a different city, you could, you know, register yourself, become a cat sitter, and then just move to that city and you'll start getting gigs and you can basically stay for free, look after a cat, and you get paid. That's the amazing thing too. You actually earn money.
Cool. That's cool. Thank you for sharing that, Yarrow. Thank you. And just thank you for spending time with us today overall. You know, you've shared a very insightful, your very insightful journey of how you've done some things. You've managed to travel the world and accomplish the things that you have. Traveling for me is near and dear to my heart. You're just something about being outside of where you live, you know, outside of your country. You just go somewhere, you know, okay, I'm going to come back to Jamaica, but I'm traveling here. Like I'm putting together a trip to Ghana next year. It's a woman empowerment trip. Yeah. So, you know, it's just very, it means a lot to me, this conversation. So thank you so much. Oh, by the way, how can our community of listeners get in touch with you?
For my company, inboxdone.com, if that appeals. But for me, you can still find all my work, my blog, my podcast, and contact details at yarrow.blog. So yarrow.blog.
Okay, interesting. All right. And of course, you're on Twitter as well.
Yep, I'm on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn. They're all there.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much. I wish you all the best as you continue to enjoy life and do business.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And thank you, my peak performer, for tuning into this episode with Yarrow Stark. I certainly look forward to connecting with you next week when I will be doing a solo episode. Or no, it's not next week I'm doing the solo episode. So let me scratch that. So I'll be doing a solo episode pretty soon, but I just want you to come back for another insightful episode. Yeah, I think next episode after this one is going to be with Arlon Hamilton. Please connect with me for all things podcasting, whether you want podcast power, the quick start guide to launching and leveling up your brand, or you want podcast coaching, podcast production service done for you, you want some online course on podcasting, yeah, just visit hennikowatkisporter.com and you can send me a WhatsApp message from my homepage. As I leave you, this week's point of hope comes to us from Psalm 139, verse 7. Where shall I go from your spirit, or where shall I flee from your presence? Do what good? And that's the wrap, Yarrow. That's the wrap. Thank you so much.